You know, just when I get comfortable with the studio, I have a major disruption happening and I've got to move it to another room, yet another room. It has now been in three rooms in my house and it is soon to go to a fourth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael Kroos. I am the chief geek in charge. I am here to talk about your botanical buddies and stuff. And what we're going to talk about now is spring. Oh, I just slammed on the desk. Did you hear that? Or did my really cool microphone knock that out? You probably heard that. But anyway, it's spring. And last week, we talked about what to do with the lawn in the spring. Let me tell you what I've been doing with my shrubs in the springtime. And springtime is such an important time for all of your ornamental plants. That's your shrubs, your small trees. I don't want to talk about the big trees, but you know, big trees you got to spend some money with because you got to get an arborist out to cut out all the dead wood. Now, when I lived in my other house, the other house that I had just prior to this one, the one where the ex Mrs. Kroos and her new husband live in, it was a nice house. But anyway, over there we had a big oak tree in the front yard, and I used to climb that puppy myself. Of course, I was younger then. And I would do the trimming in that tree. I would do the pruning in that tree. I'd prune out all the dead wood and everything. Then I just got, you know, I can't do this. Tree's getting too big, and I'm all, you know, I got, you know, five kids. I shouldn't be up in a tree. So I stopped being up in a tree, and I hired an arborist to come out and prune down all of the dead wood and all of that good type of stuff. And I've done the same thing at this house where I've got more trees. I have spent literally thousands of dollars on arborist here trimming these trees down as far as I am legally allowed to trim them. The city won't let me remove the trees, so, you know, I just keep cutting, having them cut back. And I spend a lot, I got all the branches off my house and everything. But anyway, back to what I did this week for myself and my neighbor, because I'm just a nice guy. All of my shrubs needed their spring fertilization. And I want to tell you what I use to fertilize in the spring on my shrubs. Now, on the lawn, we already talked about this before, I'm a big milorganite kind of guy. I love milorganite, or the generic version of milorganite, which, by the way, doesn't even cost that much less. It's just, it's got bigger prills. But, you know, and some of the milorganite, of course, got in with my shrubs. But the shrubs need a little bit more attention. Because, you know, I've got some hibiscus and I've got, you know, a lot of colorful shrubs out there. And they need a little bit more attention. So I give them, you know what I fertilize them with? I fertilize them, and I recommend this to you. I wholeheartedly recommend this to you. I recommend fertilizing them with, and this is what I did this week, with a fruit tree fertilizer. Yeah. The analysis is usually somewhere around, but not exactly all the time, a 4-6-8. That's 4% nitrogen, 6% phosphorus, and 8% potassium. The nitrogen is lower than normal, which is fine. You don't want your shrubs doing a burst of growth. Okay, you don't want that happening. And the phosphorus is high because some of your shrubs, well, like my hibiscus, will bloom, and I want to inspire, you know, I want to inspire the bloom. So I'm going to use that to inspire the bloom. And then the potassium is there to build the strength. But I always make sure when I buy a fertilizer for fruit trees that it has what's called a statement of secondary nutrients. That's what I just look for that. It's going to say, you know, the main numbers, that's the macro elements of the fertilizer. In this case, that's close to a 4-6-8. And then right under there, you look for something called statement of secondary nutrients. Now, the cheap fertilizers do not have this. So you want the good fertilizers. So you're going to spend a little more money, but it is so worth it because plants need these trace elements, the iron, the zinc, the molybdenum, the boron, all of the magnesium, you know, all of these things. They need that, as do we. We take minerals. Don't you take minerals? Don't you take your vitamins and minerals? If you don't, you should. But I take a mineral supplement myself because those secondary nutrients really help out, and especially with shrubs. So I find that if I use a fertilizer, a shrub fertilizer, that has a statement of secondary nutrients, and it's got all of those minor elements in it, that it's going to do a much better job. You're going to get vibrant colors in the leaves. I've got some crotons that are variegated, and I tell you what, when I use that fertilizer, the colors, the different colors in the leaves just pop. They just pop. So that's kind of a, you know, and I recommend that even for all the green shrubbery, I recommend because your greens are going to be much shinier and nicer. So I do that. Just before I do that, I go in and I stand back. This is what I always do. I stand back and I look at all my shrubs from a distance and I say, how do things look? There's got to be some pruning that has to happen there because in all of your shrubbery, there's going to be some branches that didn't overwinter well. They're going to be dead or dying. You want to get all that dead wood out of there. You want to prune things. Now you're going to have some new growth coming up. Leave that alone. But, you know, you want to go in and kind of thin things out just a little bit, you know, do a little bit of shaping, take care of things like that. Then I put the fertilizer down. And then when I put this fertilizer down, I always irrigate immediately because a fruit tree fertilizer is not going to be an organic fertilizer. You know, the nitrogen source is not going to be organic, you know, all of these things. So you want to water it in, and you want to put it down at the right rate. Follow the instructions on the bag. I use one of those Scott spreaders, those little green handheld Scott spreaders, to put my fertilizer down. I did mine, and I had, you know, I didn't use all my fertilizer, so I went next door, and I took care of that. I took care of my neighbor's shrubs in his front at the same time. I said, you know, I don't want to keep chemical fertilizers out in my garage. I just don't. You know, you get that little ammonia smell going on and things like that. So I just don't want to do that. And I don't. I if I don't use it up, I go use it at my neighbor's or I'll use it at, you know, a relative's house or something like that. But that's just me. I'm not saying if I had a shed, I would keep it in the shed. But I don't want it in the garage, which is connected to my house. Understand? That's just kind of simple there. I also don't keep chemicals in my garage. I just don't. I have got in my backyard, in a little private area of my backyard, I've got a black plastic toolbox, great big black plastic toolbox. And in that, I keep any bottled chemicals that I have laying around, which are not many, but, you know, my generic version of Roundup, glyphosate, I keep that in there. And, you know, just a few things like that. That I will keep in there. I've got a can of Orthene that I've had for a long time. And I'm just sitting there looking at it. I might get rid of that. I might take that to the county has these give us your chemical days someday. I just may take that down and get rid of that. But anyway, back to the shrubs. Do my pruning first, do my shaping, then I do my fertilizing. Now, this is the time, if you choose to do this, to put the mulch down after you have fertilized, okay? So the fertilizer is covering the mulch. So you're going to fertilize, you're going to water it in, and then it's time, if you want to put the mulch down. I'll tell you what I use for mulch. I use leaves that came off my oak trees. I just, you know, throw that underneath there. It biodegrades very, very slowly, and that's what I use. I don't go out and buy mulch. I just take what I have and stick it out there, and it looks fine. And some of the shrubs are bare. They just have bare soil under them. There's opinions about mulch. You know, people say, oh, the mulch is going to save you water. I don't know if it does or not. Here's what I know about what the commercial growers do. The commercial growers who plant all of these shrubs in lines and things like that, and also do citrus and all of those things, they don't use mulch. They have the soil bare. And the reason that they have the soil bare is that the soil is then readily available to take in minor elements all by itself, to where is if there is mulch in there, and I know this from citrus, if you have mulch underneath your citrus trees, the mulch sucks up the minor elements to the point that they just it's just not readily available to the citrus. Oranges, you know, I live in Florida, we have oranges or grapefruit, taste better if there's no mulch. They just do, especially grapefruit. Grapefruit just has this much better taste. I learned that from a buddy of mine, his dad. His dad was, you know, in the citrus business for a gazillion years. And his dad taught me, he says, never mulch underneath citrus trees. Now, back when he did it, they didn't have Roundup. He said, oh, he says, you know, when he retired Roundup, they had there was Roundup. He said, oh, I wish I had that. but they just have bare soil underneath the citrus trees. And also in apple orchards in Michigan, when I was a kid, they let nothing grow under the apple orchards. I remember that because there was an orchard right across the street from our house outside of Battle Creek, out in the sticks. There was an orchard there. And they, in those days, hoed that all the time to make sure that there were no weeds growing. Hope that helps. You're listening to Ask the Garden Geek. I no longer own a Blue Boy mower. My neighbor has kidnapped it, and he's never giving it back. I guess that's okay. I just guess that's okay. I mean, I don't know exactly how to ask for it back. It died on me, and then he volunteered to fix it. And the next thing you know, it's in a million pieces all over his garage. Oh, well. Oh, hi, everybody. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael, and I am your geek, man. I'm just here. Talking about plants, talking about my Blue Boy, my 51-year-old Blue Boy mower that my neighbor took. I saw him out yesterday mowing his yard with it. And I drove by and he waved at me, you know, and he pointed to it, you know, like he had the thing running. I said, that's nice. You know, I'm just saying to myself, are you going to give it back? And I just, you know, I don't know. He just seems so thrilled with it. He just seems so thrilled to death with it that I think I'm just going to let it stay there, unless he brings it back. If he brings it back, then I'll take it and I'll use it. But he had, I mean, I went by there and it was like in a million pieces. Now it's all back together and he's mowing his yard with it. So I don't know if he didn't have a lawnmower. I don't know. But now he's got my Blue Boy, which I guess has turned into his Blue Boy. Kind of miss it, you know. But I like my little Murray mower. I was going to buy an electric lawnmower this year, and they didn't have it. And every time they didn't have it, I spent the money on audio equipment. And then, you know, I said, okay, well, then I saved my money back up again, and then I bought some more audio equipment when they didn't have one in stock then. And now, there's this, you know, there, for the same price as the Ego all-electric self-propelled lawnmower, there's this really nice Rode, R-O-D-E, mixing board that has all of these wonderful things to it, you know. It's like $600. And I'm just, you know, I'm weighing the thing. You know, I'm just weighing things. Got a lawnmower that works. Really want the Ego, but I really want that mixer. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just don't know what I'm going to do on it. Anyway, hi, how are y'all doing? How are you doing? I hope life is well. I am up to mowing my yard now twice a week, and I'm recording today on Wednesday, and I went out before I came in here to record, and I mowed the lawn on Wednesday. I mow on the weekend, and I mow on Wednesday. Now, on the weekends, I go into great detail. I do the edging and everything else and the blowing. On Wednesday, I just go out and mow, and then I take the blower and blow any, you know, scraps that are off, but I just give it that second mow, and I do that because I've got a couple of bare spots, and I find that if you mow twice a week, plus I've, you know, been fertilizing the bejeejis out of it with the milorganite or the generic milorganite, I just think the grass grows more, and it's growing back together. It's filling in. So I do my Wednesday mow, and I'm so glad I did the Wednesday mow a while ago, because now, as I am sitting here in the studio recording this, you might be able to hear some thunder here in just a minute. I've been hearing thunder for the last several minutes. It's raining like you wouldn't believe. It is raining sideways outside. So You know, our spring is over with in Florida, where I live. I live in West Central Florida. We had a nice spring this year. It lasted a little longer than they normally do, but now it's done. It was 90 today, man, and the rains are picking up. And soon we'll get into this every afternoon at 4 o'clock rain type thing, or 4:30 or something like that. It's going to interfere with my Wednesday mow. I can just tell you, it's going to interfere with my Wednesday mow. But that's what happens. We have heat, we have humidity, we have bugs, and we have rain all the time. So, let's see, what is this? Oh, this is May. I believe that at the end of this month, we're not allowed to fertilize anymore for the whole summer. Maybe it's the middle of this month. I'm not sure. I'll have to check. But where we live, we've got all of these laws about fertilizer saying, you know, because, you know, we live on the Gulf of Mexico, and they're saying, you know, we had all this red tide, and they're saying, you know, the runoff from all of this is causing it. Well, as it turns out, the people who were saying this were relying on everything except science. And as it turns out, a study that was done by the muckety mucks that handle all of water quality and all of this good type of stuff said, no, red tide is actually created by the changes in currents that have been happening and bringing in natural nutrients from the ocean, and that the runoff from the fertilizer that we put on our yards is minute. And it really is, because our lawns, you know, that's one of the things about grass. They suck up nutrients real fast, as do shrubs, as do trees. They just suck that right up out of the ground because we've got sandy soil here. So we don't have a lot of runoff, but the law still is the law. One of the laws said you got to get rid of all of the on lawn fertilizers, you had to get rid of all of the phosphorus in lawn fertilizers, unless it's totally 100% organic. And so now, you know, you used to be able to buy like an 888. Well, now you buy an 808. So, you know, but if you're doing it for shrubs, like the citrus fertilizers or the fruit tree fertilizers, you can still get phosphorus in there. And there are some 10-10-10 shrub fertilizers that you can still get the phosphorus. I kind of think that lawns and everything needs just a little tiny bit of phosphorus to inspire the fine, minute root growth in the plants. And that's what we really want, is that fine, minute root growth in the plant. But, you know, soon we'll be out of the fertilizer business until fall. So I made sure that I did everything right this year. I put down a ton of milorganite, not a ton, but a lot of milorganite, which is a very slow release, slow release organic fertilizer. On my shrubs, I put a chemical fertilizer down. But they, you know, it's a good one. And, you know, it's just there. It's going to do what it's going to do. And then I won't fertilize the shrubs. I'm going to let all of the natural nutrients that come down from the leaves and the birds pooping and the feral cats pooping and all of that stuff kind of take care of it for the summer. Just let things go natural during the summer. I got an email asking, you know, they're saying, Michael, you're not recommending a shrub spray for the spring. And no, I've stopped spraying insecticide on all of my shrubs. Now, is that a steadfast law that I'm just real serious about? No, but I have not sprayed any insecticide on my shrubs in years. And I used to all the time. I was just, you know, oh, look at, there's, you know, mealybugs. Ah! I don't now. When I stopped doing it, I found that the beneficial insects came in and took care of the bad insects, and things just balanced out. Yes, there was a little bit of damage to some of the shrubs, but everything was natural, and I didn't have chemicals. And out in my little chemical tub, I got some ornithine sitting around out there. It's been there for years because I just haven't used it. So I think I'm just going to get rid of that, through proper channels. Like the county has a thing where you can deposit old chemicals that you don't want anymore, and they do it a couple of times a year. So the next time they do it, I think I'm going to dive into that and do that. But other than that, I'm ready for spring. Spring is here. Well, now summer's here as far as we're concerned. Folks up north are enjoying springtime. Finally, spring was real late getting to Michigan and in Maryland and Ohio and in New York and in Northern California. But happy days are here again. Well, golly gee willikers, welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. I'm Michael Kroos, and I'm the geek here. And I got announcements for you. Yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about plants in just a minute. But first, I got announcements. Yeah, got to tell you news from across the nation. Anyway, no, here's what I have to tell you, pure, out, and simple. I've been doing this nationally syndicated radio show for 33 years. And all good things come to an end. And this radio show is getting ready to come to an end. Ah! Actually, it's going to come to an end. I think my last show is going to be November 29th on radio. Okay? Now, I'm not going away. And I'm still going to be producing Ask the Garden Geek. And as a matter of fact, I already launched it this last week. The Ask the Garden Geek podcast, which is available almost right now. It's still populating, but it is available everywhere you get your podcast. What is a podcast, you say? Well, a podcast is a audio that, and by the way, I can cuss on that podcast if I want to, because it's not radio. I don't. You know, I have five kids. I have five grandchildren. I'm not going to cuss, but I can if I want to. See, that's the fun thing. But I already launched it, and it will be a weekly podcast. It's going to post usually on Fridays. Last week I posted early, but it will post on Fridays, and it's available. And if you've got a smartphone, if you've got an Android phone, you can go to your Google PlayStation and pull down the app for podcasting. I think it's called Google Podcast. I'm not absolutely positive about that. But, you know, there's also Spotify. It's on Spotify right now, which is very popular. It's not on iTunes yet, but it should be by the time you hear what I'm saying right now, because I've gone with a new host on there to do the podcast. And we just go straight on through to the other side. You know, we open the show, and sometimes it's 20 minutes. This last one was 18 minutes. You know, it might even be 10 or 11 minutes, or it might be 25 minutes. And what I'm going to do different on the podcast than what I've been doing on the show is I'm going to do guest. Yeah, I'm moving the studio here in the house once again. I have all these studio lights, you know, video lights in here. But this isn't the room that I can do this from. So I'm moving everything again to where I can have video lights. And the podcast will be available, like I say, wherever podcasts are found. But there will also, when I have guests, there will be a video of the guest appearance most of the time. Some guests probably don't want to appear on camera, but some will. And that will post on YouTube. I will set up a Ask the Garden Geek channel, which I haven't done yet, but I'll set up an Ask the Garden Geek channel on YouTube to post those on. So we will have a lot of guests talking about gardening and stuff like that. And hopefully I'll have some guests that I disagree with so I can argue with them, which will be fun. You know, I enjoy that. I used to do that quite often, as a matter of fact. But and I enjoy that. But, and I haven't done guests. I just decided not. Actually, I will tell you, a very respected radio consultant who is paid gazillions of dollars by networks just happens to be somebody who is a fan of my show. And I ran into him at a convention several years ago. And he said, "Michael," I said, "What?" He says, "Stop doing guests." I said, "What?" He goes, "Just stop having guests." I said, well, he said, "No." He said, if you had a podcast, you could do guest. But you do a radio show that is fast moving. Don't do guest. Just have it be you. You have four segments. Just be you. I said, okay. So I stopped doing guest. And actually, it was kind of a relief to stop doing guest there for a while. I enjoyed not doing guest. But now I'm ready to do guest again. So the podcast will be that perfect place to do guest. So, we're going to do that. So tomorrow, I'm going to move this studio into yet another room and set up a whole bunch of new setups in there. And then so that we're ready for November. But the podcast has already started. So the podcast has already started. And like I say, look for it. I think it's on about six things right now. Let me pop over there and see where it is. Just, you know, if you'll indulge me, you know, and see if I can find it. I can't multitask. I cannot do that. Geek podcast. Okay. Boy, this is riveting radio, isn't it? And watching me hunt and peck on my computer to see if I can find this thing. And let's see here. According to my hosting company, it's available on 6 different platforms. It's on Anchor. It's on Google Podcast. It's on Radio Public, Breaker. I've never heard of Google or Radio Public. I've never heard of Breaker. It's on Pocket Cast, and it's on Spotify. Soon it will be on Apple Podcast. It takes them about 6 days to approve you. So I'll be on Apple Podcast and, of course, iTunes at the same time. So that is there. And like I say, that is a, you know, same opening music, but a longer, you know, segment. And it is just a segment that we will do every Friday. So look for that and enjoy that. I'm looking forward to expanding on that. And being, you know, I will miss radio, but let me just say some painful truths about radio. When I was doing this show in the 90s, there was a lot of independent radio stations that were family-owned. WKXY in Sarasota, Florida, would be an excellent example. A station up in Missoula, Montana. I forget the call letters. All the wonderful stations that carried the show that were owned by people. And in the 90s, in the late 90s, early 2000s, something called consolidation came in. And very large companies, such as iHeartRadio, then Clear Channel, and CBS, and a couple of others, started buying up all these stations from these people. My friend, the Fernandezes, sold WKXY, which was a very big, popular local radio station in the Sarasota area. So, consequently, they just stuck their own programming up there, and syndicated radio just kind of stopped happening. And my show went from being on 270, 280 radio stations down to right now where we're on under 80 stations, I believe. I haven't checked lately, but I think we're under 80 stations. And another interesting thing happened along the way that I should share with you. A little inside information. People stopped listening to radio. Okay? And here's my personal take on that. Okay? Back in the 90s, if your door was not closing properly, you would wait until the weekend and you would call my friend Jeff Williams, who had the home repair show. And you would ask Jeff all about your door and how to hang a new door. And he would tell you. If you were having problems with your hydrangeas, you would wait until Saturday and you'd call me. And there was another guy who, believe it or not, did a television repair, self-repair television show back then. And you would call him. And now, guess what? You don't have to do that. You don't have to call me to ask me your gardening questions. Or you can't call the you know, there's a guy named Mike King who has a home improvement show. And it's, I don't even know if it still exists, but it was on this network. It's not anymore. But, you know, nice guy, Michael King, the Cajun contractor, he was called. Still is. And I think he's on radio, but very few stations. People used to wait and call him. Not anymore. You go to YouTube. Say, problems with my hydrangea. And then there it is. And then another thing happened that kept people, you know, and this is weekend radio. And by the way, weekend radio is where the radio networks that I worked for made all their money. They lost money during the week carrying the big star people who had the big weekday talk shows. They lost money on those. But they made money, they made bank on us. On us people on the weekends, they made bank on us. Not anymore. You know why? YouTube. You know why? Podcast. And you know what? During the week, you know what people are not listening to? They're not listening to radio. They're just not. They're listening to podcast. I have 5 kids. None of them listen to radio. They all listen to podcast. My son Zach works with me. He's got his headphones in, listening to podcast all day. Heck, I listen to podcast. I wake up every morning. First thing I do is I go to iTunes and I listen to the Daily Boost. I recommend it. 9 minutes every morning. You know, very popular. I listen to podcasts. So radio, yeah. So guess what I'm doing? I'm podcasting. And we're on right now. The podcast is live and on right now. And we'll be there every week. So I hope that gives you some information. Well, how you doing? How's the garden looking, man? Are you doing good? I got a bunch of emails this week about gardening in boxes or raised bed gardening, and someone said, "Hey, Michael, I make one of those earth boxes. I heard you talking about making an earth box." If you don't know what an earth box is, it is a nifty thing. I got about six of them. You know, most of them are in the garage, not being used. As a matter of fact, they're all in the garage, not being used right now because I'm just real busy. But I got about six of them. They cost about $55 a piece. They're not cheap. But I've also made earth boxes in the past. An earth box is a rectangular plastic container, all made with recycled plastic, that has a bottom on it that, is like a hollowed out bottom. You put soil in it. It's got a hose that goes down to the bottom, and then you pour water into the hose, and the water goes down to the bottom and gets to the soil and wicks up through the soil. And then you put a little furrow in the soil, and you put fertilizer in there one time when you plant, just one time. And then it's got a plastic cover that you put on, and you cut out little X's where you're going to plant the plants. I usually, and what I used to do, is I used to grow tomatoes for my daughter. My daughter loves tomatoes. I don't. But she loves tomatoes, and I know how to grow tomatoes. So I would grow tomatoes. I've grown everything in an earth box. I grew a small papaya tree in an earth box once. That was a little unruly, but it worked. You know, it was there. I've grown corn on the cob in an earth box. I have grown, I've grown lettuce. I've grown broccoli like crazy in an earth box. And you see, I live in the middle of Florida, and earth boxes or, you know, container growing is really ideal for vegetables in a situation like for me, because going out into the soil, I've got to deal with nematodes. Nematodes are microscopic eelworms that live down here in the tropics, and they get into the soil and they get into the roots. There are called ectoparasitic nematodes, which go and eat the roots of plants from the outside. And then there's endoparasitic nematodes that actually get inside the root and eat up through the inside of the root, and which makes it impossible for us to grow carrots and potatoes down here or any type of a root type of vegetable. So it also inhibits us growing good, healthy tomatoes out in the soil. Although I have grown tomatoes in the soil, I've grown corn on the cob in the soil, I've grown a lot of things out there, but I just tend to like using earth boxes. Primarily, I've been a busy guy. You know, I raised, you know, five kids and you know, had dogs and wives and all that good type of stuff. And yeah, stuff and worked. You know, I had, you know, business to run, all this stuff. It was easier for me to do this in earth boxes. So I got about five or six of them out there. And then I went crazy one year, and my son Jamie and I went and built a bunch of other earth boxes on our own. The earth boxes that we built, we used totes, you know, plastic totes. And we took the top off of it, and we cut the top in such a way and put holes in it and made the false bottom on the bottom of the thing. I went out and bought some tubing to stick in there. For the water to wick in, and, you know, just bought regular, we use black trash bags as the cover for that, which, by the way, is what I use on my earth boxes now. You get this one little black thing, you know, plastic thing that comes with it, but then when that's gone, you replace it with a, you know, trash bag. What's nice about that is you don't have to weed, you don't have to fertilize. All you have to do is go out there and take the hose and put it in that hose and fill it up until it shoots out a little exit hole that is on the side so it knows that it has enough water. And that's all you got to do, you know. And I'd go out every morning before I'd go to work and stick the water in there. And then I was done. Earth boxes, even on my homemade ones, made gardening very, very easy for me. So if you want to build an earth box, and I'm just doing this because I'm just doing it. I'm violating my own rule right now, but just go to YouTube and type in homemade earth box. There's a gazillion videos in there which will show you how to do it. So go ahead and do that. Or go buy an earth box. I would recommend, I will tell you, the homemade earth boxes don't last. I've got earth boxes that are 13, 14 years old, and they are intact, and they are perfectly good. All of my homemade earth boxes that I made out of totes lasted about 2 years, 3 years, and then they just fell apart. They just literally fell apart. They didn't take the sun real well. They just, you know, they just fell. They just kind of withered away. So it might be worth the while for you to do that. I'm not going to make any more homemade ones because I got five or six earth boxes now, and I'm not planting anything this year. I might do it in the fall. I might do it in the fall. I was at a client's house the other day who was asking me about earth boxes, and I knew right from the beginning of our conversation that she wanted to grow marijuana in her earth box, and I just don't like telling people how to grow marijuana. So, you know, she said, how do you grow corn on the cob? I said, well, you grow any plant in the earth box. It's real simple. You put the soil in there, and you put the fertilizer down in there through a thing, and then you cut a little X and you plant your starter plants. I don't grow from seeds in the earth box. I grow seeds in flats, get them started, and then put them into the earth box is what I do. But I just know she wants to grow her own marijuana. And it's legal just about everywhere. In Florida, we have medical marijuana, but you can't grow your own medical marijuana in Florida. You got to buy it from a medical marijuana place, and it's real expensive. I don't smoke marijuana. I don't want anything to do with marijuana. I will say the CBD oil stuff. My daughter and my grandchildren were here at Thanksgiving. Her nanny gave me a CBD gummy. Now, CBD does not get you high, but they say it helps you sleep. And I was a little bit stressed because I had grandkids crawling all over me. I had my daughter. I had her nanny. My son Zach and his girlfriend are all over. And I'm just, getting a little bit. And my daughter just walks over. No, it was the nanny. She comes over and says, here, Mr. Gross, eat this. It's CBD. I said, what's CBD? No, there's no THC in it. It's fine. So I took a CBD gummy. And my goodness gracious, I had Alexa playing soul music from a 42-year-old album that I pulled off of there. And I'm listening to Isaac Hayes while the kids are running around and Thanksgiving dinner is being made. And my son Zach saying, Dad, what are you doing? I said, I'm listening to Isaac Hayes. So anyway, that's all about earth boxes. Thank you so much.